6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Broadcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna. She hasn't spilled water on her computer this week. She didn't do it last week either, even though there wasn't a show. The week before was okay. It was the week before that. So I think you've been a month now. It's behind us, right?
I hope so. God, I hope so, because it's an expensive mistake to make.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, let's not do that again.
You've busted the slump, right? You've got yourself out of the water spilling issues. You had to have a break, not because it was a holiday. Then you had a break because it was a holiday. I mean,
yeah, I'm done taking L's.
Yeah, you've put your water into a bottle.
Yeah, I'm smart that way. I mean, my mom reminded me. Hi, Mom. That I also had done that to a previous laptop, but...
Oh, this is not the first.
So, I mean, the difference being that I had that laptop for, like, 7 years. It was on its last legs, and I spilled, like, a tiny bit of coffee on it, and it was like, no, absolutely not. So, I think I just exacerbated its downfall by a month or two.
So what you're telling me is when you feel the need to get yourself new hardware, liquid's involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are easier ways to go about it, but hey.
Yeah.
Different strokes, different folks, right?
Buy a new laptop, yeah. Do it the dramatic way, that's what I say.
Yeah. Knock on wood, I've been pretty fortunate to have not yet tried to spill any form of liquid onto a laptop of mine. Nor do I plan on doing it anytime soon, but I generally practice relatively safe liquid consumption practices around electronics.
Consumption practices, yeah. Yeah, that's because you're more sensible than me. But yes, I've turned it around and we're back on the good vibe train, much like the Canucks.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, when we last spoke with everyone, the vibes were still good. Yeah. Then we took a break, and the vibes, they weren't that good no more. But then, because of what transpired this weekend, the vibes are good again, right? Like, you know, so it's been a roller coaster if you are a Vancouver Canucks fan.
But
the Canucks also, they had the mentors trip. Is the mentors trip, and I mean, be, you know, overthinking this, is it the name mentor to get away from what they used to do, the father's trip, the mother's trip, to avoid the circumstances where a father or a mother could not make the trip?
No, I do think it's meant to be like just avoiding the fact that maybe someone's dad isn't around anymore for whatever reason. So I think it is meant to be the dad's trip. Like, I mean, all the people that went were men, so I feel like, and I don't think there'll probably be another mentor's trip maybe next year with the mothers getting to go, but like maybe an older sister comes, you know. It's more just to be a bit more inclusive, I think. But they did not bring the good vibes, the dads.
No, they sure didn't. So just to quickly catch you up to speed, Canucks won a few, they lost a whole lot, but they won one very important game, and all is okay in the world as we are recording. We're going to talk a little bit about what all transpired in that period of time that we were gone, if there's anything to be concerned about, if there is anything to be excited about, you know, what might be happening as the Vancouver Canucks get just that much closer to the trade deadline. It's only a couple of weeks away. There is a player who happens to be in Abbotsford, you know, just working out, skating on the ice, you know, we can talk about that. There was a debut. Yeah, all sorts of good stuff. So why don't we get into it in Rewind? So when we last recorded, the Vancouver Canucks were going to go into Chicago to take on future Vancouver Canuck Connor Bedard's team, Chicago Blackhawks. They won that game 4-2. Not going to speak too much about it. The fact that it's a win is a win is a win. They then came home, played the Detroit Red Wings, beat them 2-4-1. Great. And then a showcase, you know, Battle of Canada style, two really good Canadian teams up against each other. When the Jets were in town, and it looked okay until it didn't. The Jets are a good team.
The Jets are a good team. They have a good goalie.
Yeah, and what we saw from that game was that the Vancouver Canucks really had started to play a little fast, a little loose, and had it taken advantage of. Not a big deal, because, you know, these games will happen, and we've seen this before, right? The Canucks will lose a game like that, bounce back with a much better effort. Right?
Yeah, that's what usually happens. Didn't go so well this time.
So let's get into that. So they head out on the road. First game is in Minnesota on the 19th. That was a holiday for us, a holiday for some people in the United States, but ultimately an afternoon game for those who happen to be in Minnesota, morning for those of us here on the West Coast. So if I told you that the Vancouver Canucks were winning at the end of the first, and then had increased their lead mm-hmm. by the end of the second, you just turn the game off and get on with your day, right?
I mean, especially as that seemed for the first half of the season, how it went, of Canucks leading two periods in, they're going to finish it off.
And you think about it, like what happened on Saturday, Canucks bounced back that from that type of game, and they bounced back. I mean, the Canucks outplayed the Minnesota Wild through 60 minutes of play. The team was on cruise control. I mean, I don't think it would be wrong for me to suggest that is not the case. They get themselves goals throughout the lineup. Miller gets himself a hat trick going into the third. Like, hey, nothing can go wrong.
Except things did go wrong.
Yeah, and I don't know if things started to go wrong at the end of the second period when Zuccarello gets his power play marker late in the period. But regardless, that goal counts. The Vancouver Canucks are still up. What was it, 5-3 at this point?
Yeah. But you're right. Like, that was a messy way to end a pretty dominant period, I'd say. And yeah. It just went downhill from that. Like, you shouldn't be giving up a 5-2 lead. That's, like, the long and short of it. But, like, the third period was just, I mean, it was insane.
Yeah.
Bad so insane. Not good insane.
I was going to say, like, you know, the game itself, I mean, how to describe it? You have Minnesota getting a goal to make it 5-4, 30 seconds into the game. Less than a minute later, it's now 5-5. And 20 seconds after that, it's 6-5. Like,
yeah, it was floodgates opening for sure.
If you were to count those four goals in a linear fashion, the Minnesota Wild scored four goals in less than 3 minutes. And the Vancouver Canucks, it was as if like they had forgotten that the period had started. Like, I don't know how to describe it. They were shell-shocked.
Yeah.
They weren't out of it, but they were completely done.
Yeah, it was just scrambling. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, just struggling to catch up the whole time. But, like, if you look at the game as a whole, you're looking at three hat tricks. You're looking at a game that had Canucks on the two-man disadvantage four times. Like,
well, and so, yeah, I mean, like, I guess I should maybe talk about that, you know, the Vancouver Canucks found themselves down a player when Zadorov gets called for holding. Before his penalty is done, Bluger gets called for high sticking. Before Zadorov's out of the box, Petey gets called for hooking. And so that means Petey's penalty doesn't start counting until Zadorov gets out of the box. Not to worry, the goal scored, so he's out. But then Miller goes and takes a delay of game penalty at a puck over the glass.
Dumbest penalty in sports.
Right? I mean, I get it, but it's just that's almost indicative of how things were going. The fact remains, though, that Zuccarello, Eriksson-Ek, Kaprizov, and Eriksson-Ek got four power play markers in that period of time as well. You could tell the Vancouver Canucks were boomed. But I actually don't know. Did they talk about it on any of the broadcasts? Has any game ever had three different players get a hat trick?
That's a good question. I bet it has happened before, but it kind of happened more than once, I would guess. I'd be curious about that. But it was... I was just going to say that it did seem like... You were saying Canucks looked done, and they were, but, like, at the end, they had the fight, right? Like, it did seem like they were going to tie it up after Brock Besser's goal, right?
Certainly. The Besser goal, you could definitely tell, got the Vancouver Canucks sort of reinvigorated. It was Zadorov was more of a, hey, we got a goal, we're maybe still in this, but the Besser goal is like, you're telling me there's a chance. Mm-hmm. And the Vancouver Canucks have done this a number of times this season, where when down a goal late, they scrap away that loser point at best, or at worst, and, you know, get the 2 points, something that had occurred later on in the week. Unfortunately, not to be done. Two empty net goals. Blows the score. 10-7. Casey DeSmith on the hook for 8 of those 10 goals. The 2 that don't count against him, he wasn't in the net to be scored against.
Yeah, it is funny, right? Like, when you get 2 empty net goals, it just looks so funny on the score sheet. Because it's just like, looks like the goalie's like, no. Just, I'm not going back in. I'm done. Obviously Canucks were, they had a minute 7 seconds left, so they were trying to, still push for that, game time goal, and, miscalculation, shall we say that?
That's fair. So, they pack their bags, tuck their tail between their legs, find themselves off to the Mile High City, where they're taking on a good team in the Colorado Avalanche. Maybe to shake things up, or maybe because it was planned to be the case, Arsh Baines finds himself in the lineup in Denver.
Yeah.
Makes his Vancouver Canuck debut.
I mean, that's just a very cool thing to happen, an NHL debut. Obviously, the PA always flies parents in, but for all the parents to be there, that's pretty cool. We've talked about Arshie Baines before. We kind of, that he's one of the strongest players. Playing for the Abbotsford Canucks, like a very strong player in the AHL. Didn't necessarily think he was going to come up this soon. I thought they were letting him cook just a bit more. Mm-hmm. But you can't say he hasn't deserved it. And, he looked okay, right?
Was it his first? Well, he was on the ice for the opening faceoff. So I might not have been that first shift, but then the second shift, I want to say he and Bluger hooked up for what could have been a pretty goal. Mm. It was a good goal scoring opportunity is what it ultimately turned into. But you saw that he was playing with a little bit of bite, a little bit of edge. Also indicative in the few games that he also has found his way to the sin bin, maybe because of the style of play that he's bringing. But I actually don't have a problem with that. I wouldn't suggest that the penalty he's taken have been bad penalties. And he's drawn calls.
Yeah. So, that's the thing.
A player that can do both.
Yeah, get you someone that can do both, for sure. And, like, Canucks' discipline does continue to concern me a little bit, but it's one, I'm much more worried about how they're playing on the power play than the other special team.
You don't even score calls on power play, do you?
Yeah, just get them all 5-on-5. But, yeah. Overall, like, it's not huge. Like, what you want from a player like that is for them not to look lost. And if they can make a positive contribution, which I think overall he has, just it's not a huge positive contribution yet, but I think he'll find his feet a bit.
But Vancouver Canucks get off to the start that they want. They play a good team well. Miller gets himself a goal midway through the first. Canucks take a lead into the intermission. The problem is that when you're playing good teams, they too also know how to get back into games. And Colorado does just that just a few minutes into the second. The game itself, I actually thought, was really well played by the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
It's very tight. There wasn't any... Yeah, it wasn't like what we saw the night before or the day before, I guess, where it was, I was going to say, like fast and loose. It was not really fast in Minnesota. It was very loose, though. This game was fast, but very well matched. The problem is that, you know, Colorado takes advantage of opportunities when they're provided. And, you know, Johansson goes and does what he had done in the second and the third, gets that early goal. And then the dynamic changes. Colorado starts to play some shutdown hockey. Vancouver finds itself in that position that they've been putting themselves in where they have to try to scrap back into it. Not the case. Another empty net goal to make that one a 3-1 final for the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, like, I thought it was a tight game considering how badly the other game went wrong. And considering it was 24 hours later or whatever it was, just over. Like, I thought they played a good game, but it's just like the Minnesota game, right? Like, any lapses in concentration, a good team are going to take advantage of.
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, the Vancouver Canucks have now lost 3 in a row, the first time that they've done it all season long, which you have to say is pretty darn good considering how many three losses in a row we've seen for years now. Vancouver Canucks, at some point in time, we're going to find themselves on a slump. And I think 3 losses in a row could arguably be called a slump. So you'd have to think they'd look to break the slump against the Seattle Kraken, friends down the I-5. Didn't happen. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But if there were some positives to take from this game, you know, Miller is continuing to score at a brisk pace. The Vancouver Canucks were able to go and play a, you know, brisk game of hockey for a period. But I think it was very clear that the team had been worn down. And I actually posited this on Threads, but is it also possible that the Vancouver Canucks were mentally, like, boomed from that game in Minnesota, and at this point were just shell-shocked, trying to do whatever they could to get by to get home?
Yeah.
Because the second and third periods, they didn't look like they were all that inspired to be there any longer.
They were definitely gassed. I saw a, like, tweet from Dave Hall, the sort of prospects guy for Canucks Army. He was saying, like, you know, Canucks are playing their third game in 4 nights, 5th and 7. Kraken are playing their second in a week. Like, obviously, like, Canucks are going to be a little gassed. They're going to be, I didn't think, oh, they've stopped giving a F. It just felt
well,
like,
Connor Garland sure didn't. He was getting into a...
It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog, for sure.
Brandon Tanev, yeah. Turbo.
Yep. And, like, they got on the wrong ends of some crappy calls. Like, I don't know what Hoglander has to do to, like, get a penalty call given. But, yeah. They felt a little sloppy from tiredness, for sure. And just to go back to that sort of streak thing, our friends at Canucks Conversation had a fact on their show the day after the Colorado game. About, do you know how many 3-game losing streaks there were in the Canucks season last year?
3.
7.
Oh.
Seven.
Look at the optimist in me.
Yeah, I know. So optimistic. But, like, literally, like, I'd have to check that out. I haven't run the math myself. But, yeah. Like, if they've done pretty well.
Well, I trust Connect's conversation,
yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, they've just done well to get to this point. So, like, yes, it was a shame that the slump continued against the Kraken. But, again, bird's eye view. The Canucks are doing okay.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the thing to take into consideration is that the Saturday matchup at home against the Boston Bruins, despite having lost at this point four games in a row, was still a battle for the Vancouver Canucks to hold on to first place overall in the NHL. So that should put things into perspective. The team had been on a pretty solid slump by all yeah. definition, yet had built themselves up such a lead within the league that they were still in the position to go and turn things around against the Bruins. It would have been nice if the game had been scheduled for a normal 7 p.m. start. But hey, I get it. The bean counters out east want as many eyeballs as they could possibly get. Even though the game wasn't a nationally broadcast game, like,
yeah,
I mean, it was on Sportsnet, but not on CBC.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is one of those things, right? Like, I still am annoyed every time it happens, but I mean, it suited me pretty well. So I could go to a show, directly after that. But yeah, it's just one of those things. I'm just like, smaller, like, pick your battles, right? As things to get annoyed by.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Canucks came out much different than we had seen them come out against the Kraken, for one. They no longer looked a tired team, which is actually somewhat surprising because it's not as if they had a whole lot of rest. They would have got in, you know, late on Thursday night. They would have Friday, and I think they practiced on Friday, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think it was an optional skate, but by all reports, it was pretty much well fully attended. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, then they have an earlier than normal game on a Saturday for one at home. Mm. But the Canucks do come out playing well. I mean, Boston playing equally is hard, and it's not like the Bruins are a pushover in any way, shape, or form. But when the second period rolled around, the Canucks made three mistakes, and the Bruins took advantage of two of them. And you kind of felt that, oh my goodness, like the team must just be in the gutter. Like, nothing is going their way. They're not getting any puck luck. Swayman is being made to look like he's the next coming of Jacques Plante. Like, he is standing on his head, stopping everything.
Yeah. And it just did feel like a little, the whole thing felt lackluster to a certain point, right? It was just like, I didn't think, like, players are never going to care as much about rivalries as fans are. That's obvious. But the building was bumping. And
Green men were back in town.
Yeah. We saw,
we're showing off a lot more green men than I remember.
Literally about to say that. Like, yeah, turns out visible genitalia cleavage. It's Canucks good luck charm. But yeah, it just felt like, oh, Canucks have no...
Is that the technical term?
Yeah, genitalia cleavage. I didn't just make that up on the spot, but... like, it just felt
the title
like
of this episode?
Visible genitalia cleavage.
That'll get us some unwanted attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have to put an E on this now for explicit for saying that? What were we saying? Canucks lacked firepower. Yeah, but they were not packing. They were not packing. I don't know. Yeah, like,
were Force and Sully packing? Or, like, I can't tell the two apart. But.
Yeah, I cannot tell them apart with the green suit, which I guess is the point. I'm always teasing Adam Forsyth because he is like Forest. Just has the extra E on his name. That makes him crazy. He's like from the crazy arm of the family. Yeah, not actually related to a green man, but tangentially, he's my namesake.
So there were some on social media who were upset that the Bruins were getting away with more than the Vancouver Canucks were. I mean, you look at the first period alone, the only penalty called against the Bruins was James Van Riemsdyk, but arguably I think it was balanced. The Vancouver Canucks got caught for too many men on the ice, which wasn't the only team to get called that over the course of the game. But you have to consider, seeing who's in the ring next to the Bruins penalty box, maybe the referees just were doing the Bruins a favor. I don't know.
Protecting them from genitalia cleavage.
When the green men come into the building to make the announcement, they pan over and you can see James Van Rien's like, and he's doing his darndest not to like, break and smile or whatever. Like he's you could see him fighting it. And he's trying to stare forward.
But yeah, there was definitely twitching of facial muscles there. But yeah, like,
so we've lost the plot. That's what we do here at C4.
Third period. Yeah. Like, what is it? Like halfway through, 12:49 is the time of the Brock Besser goal.
And it's wide open, Brock.
Yeah. It did feel like just this moment of relief, right? Like for the whole building, for Brock Besser. And he was Johnny on the spot. He still had the work to do, but like, yeah, as you say, he was left wide open.
You know, you watch the second period at the end and the Vancouver Canucks really started to control play. Third period, the Vancouver Canucks had the Bruins hemmed into their zone.
Yeah, it felt much more dynamic.
Two-thirds, three-quarters of the period, it felt. And if it wasn't for the fact that the Bruins were getting in the way of pucks and Swayman, again, doing everything that he could possibly do to make sure that his body got in the way of something, you just had this feeling the Canucks, if they could only get one, that'll just be enough to, you know, to crack that ice, to cause you know, everything to go. And when the Canucks eventually got Demko out of the net, because that was the other thing, they seemed to, as they see the clock going down, got a little, you know, nervous energy. But they puck in and when Meyer scored that, or was it Myers? No, sorry.
No, Hronek.
Hronek.
After.
Scores that goal.
Yeah, being, you would say, the at fault for the opener. And, like, had a rough couple of games, I would say, in a Canucks jersey. But, like, you have just earned your spot, like, you don't have to buy a beer in this town for a good long while.
When he scored, I shouted, scared the hell out of Sky. Puppy Forest was like, what the heck is going on? She settled back down and I gave her extra pets and apologies for startling her. But like, I've shared this on this show this season. I've started to find that there's some emotion coming back into my viewing experience. And I don't know what it was about this particular game, but like I was in it. And the Besser goal is like, great goal. Hronek scores. Yes. So let me tell you what overtime was like. Well, first and foremost, the Vancouver Canucks come out again. It's like blood in the water. They're on edge. Boston is the team that commits the too many men malfeasance.
Malfeasance.
Or transgressions. Malfeasance. I was trying to think of a big word.
That's a great word.
But was it Hughes that fired the puck towards the Bruins bench to ensure that the call got made? Because I think it was Marchand that was like taking his sweet time to get off the ice.
Good question. That would be leadership. Just like perfect like leadership moment. I can't remember.
Like they showed the replay and in whoever the defenseman was that had the puck.
To watch that again.
They threw like there was an open Canuck player up the ice, but instead of throwing it to the player, throws it towards where the infraction would have to be called. Because like the player who jumped off is like immediately involved in the play before Marchand has even left the Vancouver Canucks zone.
Yeah.
And it was like both referees had their arms up straight away. Like it was
Yeah.
That egregious.
That's the thing. You can not call stuff in overtime, but you can't not call something that obvious in overtime, right. Especially when it's like, I mean, despite what Canucks, reading the Canucks penalties over the last few years would tell you, everyone knows how to count, so.
Yeah. And immediately from the faceoff, Vancouver Canucks throw it around. Brock Besser gets himself in the way of a shot from the point, and bingo bango, Besser gets two.
Yeah.
And the Canucks get 2 points in overtime, and at the end of the day, who cares if the Bruins take home a loser point?
Yeah.
Vancouver Canucks, top of the league.
Yeah. Like, I did tweet out before overtime started that just for the narrative, it would have been great if Connor Garland scored the winner, but good Massachusetts boy. Very quick sidebar, but this is how Massachusetts Connor Garland is. During, they do the filming Canucks players turning up to the game, mm-hmm. They walk in their suit, whatever. I noticed Connor Garland carrying a book. I think this was last week during his walk-in. Hockey players don't often read, so I had to look up what the book was. It's a book about the Boston Celtics.
Oh, I was going to say, like when you were talking about coming from Massachusetts, what was he carrying in a box of Dunkin' Donuts?
That would be very, very Massachusetts of him, very Boston of him. But yeah, I was like, yeah, of course it was. But yeah, honestly, the bar I was in went crazy. The building went crazy.
I scared the dog again.
You scared the dog again. Like, it really just, as much as one, we're not concerned about a four-game losing streak when it's the first of the season in end of February. And certainly any concerns we do have, you just get washed away. Like, beating Boston will always have a lot of currency in this town. Always.
Yeah. Well, and it says, I was describing to my wife, because she's like, oh, you're really getting into it again. I'm like, no, it's Boston. The Canucks have lost, four games prior to this. This one win is nice, but it's just that much nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It's turned everything around. The Vancouver Canucks are, Stanley Cup champions again. The parades are being planned as we record. Sure, a little bit of a, fair weather experience from many, but who cares? It's a good time to be a Canucks fan again, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like I say, beating Boston, even in a crappy year, will always be fun. And I still think it's important. But yeah, doing it in this year when it feels like it's, the two giants of the league tussling at the top of the NHL and Canucks come out on top, that's huge. Does feel like gives it an extra special kind of glaze to it.
Yeah, and as we record right now, the Vancouver Canucks currently still sit first overall in the NHL with 82 points. That's one up on both the Rangers and the Bruins. Possibility of, things being tied does exist, and the Rangers actually have one more win than the Vancouver Canucks, but the Canucks have a few extra loser points to the Kings, the Rangers. Mm. The reason I got the Kings on the mind is that if we look at the upcoming Vancouver Canucks schedule, they take on the Penguins Tuesday, and they take on the Kings on Thursday before heading back out on the road, because the schedule maker has decided the Vancouver Canucks need to have one final road trip to wrap things up. They head down to California to take on the Stalwart Ducks on a Sunday night. But looking at the next week, presuming the Canucks have turned things around, gotta think they get themselves 3 wins here.
Yeah, I'm buying that. Like, the Kings is they're not an easy game for sure. But then, don't look as threatening as they did maybe in the earlier season, which I think is pretty, natural for a team that's on its way up and has a lot of young players and, like, is going to be a force to be reckoned with, that they're not going to have the staying power that other teams do. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting, though. Like, at one point, the Vancouver Canucks, Kings, and Golden Knights were essentially, you know, switching position as each one of them played. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the standings now, the Vancouver Canucks have a 9-point lead on the Knights, and they have a 14-point lead on both the Oilers and the Kings. The Oilers, the team that was supposed to be the favorite and had the horrible start to their season, to their credit, have turned things around considerably, but it dug themselves such a big hole that they're still that far behind the Canucks. But yeah, I mean, I look at this week and I feel like if they've turned things around, and I mean, it's an asterisk, but I'm going to be positive here. I think that's three dubs. I think the Kings will be a tough game. I think the Penguins, when they come to town, Penguins are generally a tough team regardless. It's just the way they're built. And the Ducks is a must-win game. When you play a team like the Ducks in Anaheim, regardless, that's a team you need to beat.
And I would say that the Penguins game is that not just Canucks window shopping for the deadline.
Probably. You're right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's another deal to be done. But yeah, like, Penguins are not the powerhouse. Like, was it like the window is rapidly closing on them? So yeah, you would think that Canucks need to put it together versus the Penguins and the Kings, and certainly against the Ducks.
So are we both giving them 6 points out of six?
Six out of six, baby.
My goodness, C4, the optimistic Canucks podcast. Only one.
Mm-hmm.
The only one. Well, speaking of all this optimism, I think you and I need to take a break to calm ourselves down. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
We kind of got towards the direction of the topic that we want to discuss next in Rewind, and it's been one that has been sort of a recurring theme over the last few shows. But the Vancouver Canucks are currently experiencing what I would best describe as disciplinary issues. And I don't mean that in the sense that they got a bad dressing room, though that might be the case. Who knows? I mean, we've heard no stories. And if there's one thing in Vancouver that gets leaked out with the Wild Abandon, it's dressing room stories.
Yeah, I'm sure we'd know if there were any serious issues. Something would be come leaking out.
Yeah, but what we're talking about is what's happening on the ice. And, you know, part of me wonders if what we're seeing is not so much a team that is lacking discipline, in so much as it's a team that's simply tired and worn down and is finally getting to that point where they're becoming a little, for lack of a better way to describe it, lazy in their approach to the game.
Right. And, like, that's fine at the end of a long road trip, but, like, what is the playoffs if not a road trip every week, you know? Like, the playoffs are going to be a grind, and that can't be something that goes out the window. And you would think, like, it does seem to be that the Canucks are moving back towards that, where it's like, when you're tired, when you're not getting the calls you want, you have to fall back on your systems and just play the disciplined hockey. If you can't play good hockey, like, if you can't be good, be careful, is what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, the Vancouver Canucks right now sit 18th in the league with their net PK. Just over 80% of the penalties they take, they're able to kill off, 81.1 according to the NHL, which isn't horrible. Like, you consider that, you know, one out of five penalties results in a goal. We'll just ensure that you don't go to the box more than four times in a game and you're pretty good. But the, you know, distance from the bottom, which is the Montreal Canadiens, is 75%, which now we're talking 5 percentage points. That's not a whole lot. The difference between middle of the pack where they currently are and bottom of the barrel. It is a full 10% greater to be at the top of the league. And like the team that the Vancouver Canucks will be facing later this week in the Los Angeles Kings, this is a team who, if they take penalties, kills them off. The 92.1 is where they sit. And I think when we start to really look at some of the, you know, better teams in the league right now, it's the ones who generally have a pretty good penalty kill, but then dominate in having, you know, a very impactful power play. And that's another area that the Vancouver Canucks have been struggling of with as late. Like right now, they're just about 20% on the power play, sitting 12th in the league, but they were much higher a month ago. Mm-hmm. Lately, they seem to be hesitant to shoot while on the power play.
Yeah, which, like, it's great that, like, the power play last year, right, was slow, and that was, like, a huge problem with it. I don't necessarily think it's slowed down. You know, the passes are still fast, but it's like, yeah, the shots need to come, and they aren't, and it's, yeah, that's like a concern, right? Because it's like, yes, the whistles get put away to some extent in the playoffs, but that just means you'll have your opportunities, so you really need to capitalize on them and get them.
Yeah. The thing that the Vancouver Canucks had success with at the start of the season when they were on the man advantage was the fact that they were moving the puck around with speed and generally five or six passes and there was a shot in net. What I find surprising is that we have seen how the Vancouver Canucks have started to see success when they've scored goals more recently, even when they've been losing, by throwing the puck at net. Throw out the puck at net, good things will happen. Could be a garbage goal, could be a tip in. Like, I mean, you know, Lindholm's first couple of goals as tip-ins. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You know, I think both specialty markers as well. Like, this is the thing that was working for the Vancouver Canucks, and I don't understand why they've gotten away from it. Like, if it's not, you're finding that teams are starting to shut down your passing lanes, shoot. Throw that puck towards the net. Good things will happen. And I'm not talking about just throwing it away. You know, just when you have that shooting lane, be selfish. Shoot the puck. If the Vancouver Canucks were losing games and out shooting the competition significantly, you're just up against hot goaltenders. But that's not seemingly the case right now. Now, taking it back to the penalty kill, where the Vancouver Canucks penalty kill was working well was when they were aggressive on the PK.
Yeah.
Like the number of times that we saw that the two forwards playing high on the blue line and having trust in the defenseman to get in the way of the shooting lane, blocking that puck, and then relying on your goaltender, whether it be Demko in most cases or DeSmith. They seem to now no longer be as confident and therefore are much more reactive and defensive in their posture on the PK.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point because, you know, we talked about it last year, actually, about, like, the power kill, so to speak, which is the aggressive penalty kill turning into offense. And Canucks had a bunch of shorthanded goals last year from that. It's not like we need to see all those shorthanded goals necessarily, but it's a case of being aggressive in your defense, for sure.
Yeah. Do you think the Vancouver Canucks need to tinker with either of their PK or their power play? Do you think that needs new blood, whether it be through an addition coming to the trade line, or do you think it's just a matter of injecting a little confidence into the two systems?
I mean, it's hard to say. I don't necessarily think it's really a personnel problem so much as, like you said, like an attitude problem of the way they're playing. But and the attitude also needs to, yeah, like we say, like come in the form of discipline into not taking dumb penalties. Because, yeah, there's only so much you can control from an officiating point of view. But, like, don't give the refs a reason to have you in their sights, you know? Which mm-hmm. the Canucks tend to when they get a little on the back foot in games.
Yeah. Well, regardless, I do feel that the Vancouver Canucks need to address both. Should they wish to then be competitive and in a position to go on a long run come playoff time. I think that's very clear. Yeah, anyone, it shouldn't be a surprise.
Key. Yeah.
But the reason I talked about the potential of injecting something like a person or some personnel is that the Vancouver Canucks have had Phil Kessel in town-ish. He's been out in Abbotsford working out, skating. The belief is that at some point in time, the Vancouver Canucks will get Phil in front of a piece of paper and a pen where he will sign on the dotted line and be given a jersey, getting himself the Matt Sundin treatment. For those that don't remember, Matt Sundin signed with the Vancouver Canucks late in the season and helped guide the team towards the playoffs. Do you think Phil is going to fill that role?
Oh, good. Could have another Phil on the team. Do I think that he would provide a positive or negative impact to the team? I think he'd provide a positive impact to the team. Do I think that someone that hasn't played for 5 months should be like, you know, the answer to like making a significant difference in the playoffs? I'm not sure. Like, that doesn't seem like it should be the answer to me. Like, do I think Canucks need more help still? Yeah. Is Kessel enough? I don't know. I feel like the temptation is to say... He's cheap, for sure. He is cheap. And he has the experience? Yes, definitely. He's disciplined... In terms of his, he's like a great pro. Playoff experience, for sure. Do I think he's going to move the needle, especially over a long period of time? Like, yeah, that's where I start to like get unstuck on it.
Well, I mean, when we look at Matt Sundin, he was playing poker for quite a bit of time before he got talked into donning a Canucks jersey so that he could retire a Canuck. That's totally what he did. And when we consider his impact on the team, it was more the presence in the room, showing some of the younger players how to actually play. One might argue his involvement helped set the tone for the team towards what worked out to be a pretty good year in 2011. I wonder if Phil Kessel is sort of that guy here. Because if we think about the current front office, they've talked about how they want this to be a team that wins and continues to win. I don't think anyone would disagree that they seem to be a little bit ahead of schedule, but I do wonder if they're now really trying to show this team that has not had success, what success is like, what one also has to do to maintain that level of success. I think Kessel sort of fills that void. Does he push the needle and bring a cup to Vancouver? No.
Yeah.
But if he's part of the team and gets his name on the cup, I'm all for it.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Would I be concerned if like Canucks won the cup and Phil Kessel played fourth line minimal minutes and made no impact or not a great impact and gets his name on the cup? Not at all. Good for Phil. Like, if he gets another like contract, it's great for him. But we haven't heard a lot about it. since he started working out.
Well, there's no hurry.
No.
Well, there is, but there not is. To the extent that he has to sign tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. There is a literal deadline for it, but not, yeah, the deadline is not in the immediate future. Yeah, and it's like nothing to lose, right? Like,
well, you give up absolutely nothing to sign him. He does take up a contract spot, but I mean, that's something that you can work out. The Vancouver Canucks currently have $3.5 million in cap space due to LTIR. The contract he signs is a prorated contract, so that he could sign a $3 million deal and he doesn't consume the $3 million that exists there. So, like,
hope he's not this is, that.
You know, there are other teams in the league that do far more egregious things when it comes to working the cap and massaging the cap
with
active-ish players on injured reserve who miraculously are fully healthy come playoff time.
Yeah, and I have no concerns about that.
Yeah, that no the Canucks cons. Are in a position they could go and potentially find an advantage that other teams are taking advantage of themselves.
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, like zero qualms about that. Like Canucks legitimately have like injury concerns on that. Like Carson Soucy just like cannot stay healthy. Unfortunately, just through a unfortunate mixture of circumstances. So yeah, I don't think Canucks are in any way abusing the cap like many other teams have, if they do something like that. But yeah, I just don't want it to be like, okay, so all we need is Phil Kessel. He's gonna like put us over the edge. Like, is he gonna be like creating shots on the power play? Like, because that's what Canucks need. Like, they need more, like, offense for sure. And I don't know.
Well, they've been trotting out the two defensemen again on the on the power play. And I think that has more to do with the concern of the special teams goals that they were, or shorthanded goals, sorry, they were giving up than anything.
Valid, yeah.
But you cycle that defenseman back out once the confidence is there and Kessel can sort of slide in. And he's a big enough body to be Phil the Thrill Kessel in front of the net.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I would just say, let me see, like, I would say not even cautious optimism, just put me down as slightly skeptical that he will make a huge difference. But if he comes in and just teaches, like, the young players how to be a pro and survive a playoff series and a long playoff run and how, like, to make that work for you, like, that's a good enough contribution for the price that he'll hopefully come in at.
Works for me, Anna. What else works for me is the fact that we'll be back again next week. We won't be taking another week off until, well, I guess it would be Easter. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Easter is that it lands sort of near the end of the season. So we'll still have a few weeks before we get into playoff hockey. It will be the first time in a while that you and I will be recording podcast episodes during Canucks playoffs.
I know. Isn't that fun?
We did that during the bubble, but like it was weird. And that was not really playoffs. So I don't know what we'll get up to. I mean,
yeah, we will have time to figure out how that works for a playoff schedule. But what a fun problem to have.
Yeah, I, you know, thinking back, I want to say our podcast has maybe recorded during playoff hockey 3 times if we include the bubble.
Like 3 episodes.
About that. Yeah. Maybe 4, because bubble was prolonged. So yeah, and that's because like there was
depressing because there was the 2015.
There was the Willie Desjardins bounce back
one series against the we lost.
Yeah,
Game 7,
and then there was the bubble.
That's it. Yeah, in our time.
So
yeah.
Oh man. Don't know what it's going to be like, Anna. I do not know.
We don't know.
Really, That's... really changes things where we could be like so excited, yay, on the 1 week, and then we record the next week. Oh, darn it.
Yeah. But I'm excited to go on that adventure, like that emotional roller coaster. Sign me up.
Yeah. Speaking of signing you up, if you, a listener, want to be involved, best way to do it is to follow us on all the social media platforms that exist out there, primarily Twitter and Threads. I refuse to call it X because it just seems weird. Mm-hmm. We are at the C4 Podcast on Twitter and at the Real C4 Podcast on Threads. But you can also join our Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, and you can take part in the conversation there at Gate 16, unless you're all about food, and that's where Nom Nom comes into play. Anne and I are obviously also on the social media platforms. I'm Light4, she's A4C03, and we're pretty consistent across the board. The only one that I didn't get was TikTok. Huh. I'm the Light Force there because someone had taken Light Force on TikTok.
How rude of them.
Gosh darn them. I know, right?
I am not on TikTok in case there is an A4Size03 out there on TikTok.
Not yet.
It ain't me.
That's too bad. And if you want to support our show from a financial perspective, you can head to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward to you to buy me a coffee, or as we call it,
buy me a pint.
And you can chip in a couple of bucks as a one-off that literally goes towards some pints for Anna and I, or alternatively can support us on a monthly or annual basis. I believe it's $5 a month, or annually it'd be $50 for the year. And that's in Canadian funds. I know some of our listeners are outside of the great confines of the Great White North, and therefore your currency may be different, but for us it's in Canadian. So I look at it this way. If you're paying in like US dollars, you get a discount because of the exchange rate. Very affordable show to support. It helps us keep the lights on and pay for the technology we use to record. But Anna, any final words of wisdom for our listeners this week?
I did Google about the hat tricks in a game thing. But I am now doubting this source only because it said that there was only 2 hat tricks in the Canucks-Minnesota game. So I don't know if it's counting all OT hat tricks. But there was 1 4 hat trick game, and it happened in 1920.
Okay.
Montreal Canadiens versus the now defunct Quebec Bulldogs. So, not a
What was the final score?
Great question.
Does it say?
Yes, 16-3.
Whoa.
Yeah, that is wild to me. So, yeah. There you go. Piece of NHL history right there.
Wow. That's something. Final words of wisdom from me. You know, continue to wash your hands, get lots of sleep, drink lots of vitamin C if you can, because my daughter brought home school plague. She bounced back after a day, and I've been flat on my butt for like a week. I'm getting over it now. You can probably still kind of hear it in my voice because it's gone into the sinuses a little bit, but oh.
School plague sucks. Yeah, the worst.
I genuinely wonder how, like, teachers and people who work with kids do it. Like, the amount of stuff that you must be exposed to. One, I guess maybe your immune systems are, like, nuclear powered as a result, but...
Ugh. Yeah, I'll be honest. There's been a few people around my work dropping like flies, either working from home or, yeah, taking off sick. So, touch wood, that doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been doing. I actually took a sick day last week because I was just like, the head was spinny and I was done. I spent the whole day on the couch, which actually my daughter then comes home from school and asks my wife, why does daddy get screen time when he's sick? And she raises a very fair point because she doesn't get it when she's sick.
That's all I used to do when I was sick. Like, watch daytime TV.
But oh no, we don't let her have screen time when she's sick. Strict. She can rest. She can, you know, yeah. We're very strict parents, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Laying the smack down.
Apparently.
Well, Anna, it's been a blast. I'm Chris at Lightforce. She's Anna A4603, and this is the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna Chris. Anna and Chris. Chris and Anna. Whatever. We out.